We are holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. Winding the Ika. Okay, we've been talking about different kinds of things that are mezonos versus hamotziu, whatever. So continuing on that topic. The Gemara says truknin or troiknin, whatever, chayovin b'chala. Truknin, the Gemara is going to define in a second what those are chayiv and chala, so you make a dough for them, then you need to take chala before you, and you need to take chala from it. V'chiyosa rovin omer v'yechnin, truknin p'turin v'chala. When Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rav Yechanan, though, that truknin are potter from chala. Although there's a different version over here on the side that Goethe Gura brings that actually he confirmed the first thing that they are chayev and chala. It's okay, you have machlokes on it. My troikinin, Amar Abaye kuva da'ara. So Abaye says this means you make a hole in the ground. Da'ara means in the ground, and then you pour water and flour into that. And it bakes in this hole in the ground.
It's a hole in the ground.
It's a hole in the ground where you pour in water and flour, and it bakes over there. So the point is, the main point is that it starts out as more like a batter than a dough. The way you're pouring it in means it doesn't have the thick consistency of a dough. But as it
is,
because it's good, because I shouldn't say in the ground. Okay, da'ara doesn't mean in the ground. Actually, Rashi though translates oitzamakim cholo bekira. You're right. It means that you make a hollow in the stove. So I don't know why it's called da'ara. Maybe sometimes people did it in the ground and then they would have to heat it using something from the outside. Whatever it is, the point is that it bakes inside this cavity and then it thickens up. It kind of thickens up as it's baking in there because you have a large amount of it. So therefore, as it's baking, then more of the water boils away, and you end up with something relatively thick. Okay.
So it's in a cavity,
in the way Rashi is describing it over here. It's in a cavity that is in the stove. So you pour in a batter over there, and then as it bakes inside this cavity, but then as it's baking in there, it becomes a little bit, it thickens up a little bit. You know what, one second, let me get
the volume of the after that is short, but I don't know if it's relevant to this, because we're going to be referring to it a lot.
So that's troikinin. So again, according to the gears that we have in the Gemara in front of us over here, it's machloika, whether it's chayiv mechala or not, and what the din is as far as hamotzi or mezonos with it, we'll get to soon, and according to the Hagoyes, there's no machloikas, and it's just the chayiv and chala, and that's that. And the reason would be, again, because it does at least thicken up a little bit. So that's here. The Alter Rebbe, for example, describes it in Hilchos and Seder Birkas Hananim. The description is basically taken from what's in Shulchan Aruch. Troiknin, Shabolin, Kemach, Bamayim, Blue, Raka, Yosemite, Dye. They mix flour and water with a very thin consistency, so more like a batter than a dough. Then they pour it into a hole or a cavity in the stove or in the oven. So it becomes a little thick after it's baked. That's tricky.
So it started out
as a very thin consistency, but then as baking it thickens.
Like a pizza in a way?
I don't know. No, not really. Okay. But I'm gonna buy trisa p'turim in a challah. Because pizza is just a flat bread. It's baked in the oven in that shape.
It's thick on the edge.
Yeah, but that's not because it was poured into a hollow or whatever. But Amar Abaye Trisa Pturim and Achala. Abaye also says in that connection that Trisa is potter from Chala. My Trisa. So what is Trisa? So the two versions. Ikadamri Govil Martach. Some say that it means that you make a dough of very thin consistency, like a batter, and then you pour it onto the stove, onto the hot stove, and it spreads out over there and bakes there. So sort of like a very flat pancake.
Mm-hmm.
That's one version. So the difference being, in other words, that pancakes as we make them nowadays often are made to begin with. If you make pancakes using an actual dough, then for sure they're chayv and challah, and then they'd be hamotzi as well. That's, for example, pizza is an example of that. The dough is actually made thick to begin with. It's real dough. But here we're talking about it's more of a batter, and it's poured out, so it becomes very thin as it bakes. So that kind of thing. The Alter Rebbe describes, for example, this is more similar. Trusa, according to this version, is more similar to pancakes. They start out as a batter and then they spread out. They spread out to the size of the pan or the size of the stove or whatever that you're baking them on. As opposed to tricking, right? The Ikka Ta'amri Nama Dehindika. A different version is that Trusa means Nama Dehindika. Hindika literally means from India, as we talked about the other day. So it means, Rashi describes, that they would make bread by putting dough onto a spit, onto a pole, and baking it. And as it's baking, the whole time they're dribbling oil, or eggs on it, but it's being baked on the spit, and it's having stuff poured on it as it's baking. So according to the second version, that's what treta is, and we're saying that's potter from challah because that's not a normal way of baking it. Rabbi Yoni brings a different explanation that nama behindika is a type of bread that's made specifically for the purpose for women using it for cosmetics. So it is edible as well, but that's not the primary purpose they make it for. Okay. The ikka d'amri, and then there's a third version of what treta is, lechema osu lekutach. Bread that is made in order to be able to put in kutach. Kutach is a dip that they had in those days, where it was basically a very strong sour cream. It consisted of sour milk, breadcrumbs, which often were moldy, and salt. The Gemara elsewhere says it's not very, very good for you health wise. But in Bavel, they ate it as a regular dish. So when you make bread for kutach, Rashi explains that they actually make it as regular dough, but they bake it in the sun, rather than baking it in an oven. So therefore, why they baked it in the sun, I don't know. I guess because whatever the reason was, then that's the deal. Tosfos questions that and says that not necessarily is that the thing. Rather, Tosfos talks about that it may be that it has more to do again with the consistency of the dough, not so much where it was baked in the sun versus in an oven, but rather the actual consistency of the dough. So in this connection, Rav Chiya teaches the Braisa that bread that's made for kutach is potter from challah. So the question is, well, Tanya chaya b'challah. We learn in one second. So we learn in a braisa. Rav Chiya says Rav Chiya said in a braisa that's potter from challah. But don't we learn another braisa that it is chayev from challah? The answer is hosim kitzatoni taima. Over there, the reason why we would say it's chayev and challah is like the braisa continues. The braisa gives a reason why there should be the distinction. Rav Yehuda Omer, ma'aseh me'chichin aleha. Rav Yehuda says that the shape or the form in which you make it demonstrates what purpose you made it for. Do you make it purely for kotach, or did you make it that it's actually also that's bread that you're going to eat? And if you don't end up eating it, then you'll crumble it up and use it in kotach.
The shape of kotach.
Namely, asa'an ka'ovin chayovin. Namely, if he makes it like thick loaves, like regular loaves, ka'ochin as a different girsa, whatever, which is a word for a loaf of bread. So then if he makes them, in other words, Rashi describes, if he actually shapes them and he bastes them and he makes them like a nice loaf of bread, then it shows that he made it basically as bread. And then, okay, if he doesn't use it for bread, then he'll end up crumbling it for kutach. So then chayovin. So then those are chayov and challah. Kelimudin, but if he makes them just like boards, just like without any particular shape or something, so then it shows he's just like he's just making it for the sake of being crumbled up into kutach, turim, then they would be potter. So it comes out according to Rashi's explanation that the key thing is not so much whether it's baked in the sun or not, but what shape it was made in. And the argument would be that midaraisa that it would be potter from chala either way because it's based in the sun. And midrabanon, if it's made ka'ochin or ka'ovin or whatever, it's made as thick loaves, then it would be chayav midrabanon because then that's easily confused with regular bread or because you might change your mind and bake it in an oven.
What do we see what's baked in the sun is potter or it's not considered
It's not considered lachem. It's not considered lachem. Because it's not, because usually because lachem is baked in it is baked in an oven usually. But Tosfos understands differently again that the real big key thing in it is that here we're only talking about something which started out to begin with as a batter like thing. If it started out as a dough, then either way it's gonna be chayiv and chala. The relevance to it, first of all, this is relevant as far as the halachas of chala. Tosfos mentions, for example, given Tosfos's distinction about a thick batter, about a thin batter versus a thick dough, mm-hmm. So you get into the question, among other things, of you get into, for example, questions about things like pancakes and noodles and things like that, right. Whether they're chayiv and challah and whether you make hamotzi on them. So as far as noodles, you actually have a machloekas rishonim based on this, whether the fact that they're made to begin with to be cut up into noodles, so you make a dough to begin with, it may even be of a thick consistency, but then you make it to begin with to be cut up into noodles,
right.
So therefore there's an argument that it shouldn't be chayiv and challah.
Right.
There's a counter argument that it should. So therefore when it comes to a noodle dough or things like that, you take challah without a bracha. As far as hamotzi, it basically depends on, we mentioned at the end of the previous Gemara, that it depends whether it has turisa dinama, the shape of bread. So therefore, when it comes to noodles, those don't have the shape and the form of bread at all. So you save mizonis on them. When it comes to various kinds of pancakes and things, then it's not so simple. Then it's not so simple. So the Alter Rebbe sums it up over here in Seder Birkas Hananim that when it comes to, for example, so you come to pancakes, blintzes, and things like that. So it depends, right? So it depends. Well, they're very thin, but more to the point is they're made from a batter to begin with. They're not made from a thick dough. So the Alter Rebbe describes over here that when it comes to, for example, pancakes, you would say mizonis on them, even if you made them the main part of your meal, like you're eating them with other things just in order to fill up, then you would say mizonis on it. Also similarly, the Alter Rebbe talks about as far as blintzes, then he says that no. Then he brings another opinion. That says that no, if you kaveh a suda on these things, then you would say hamotzi on them. So this is where we get the concept, for example, as far as pizza, you mentioned pizza before. So actually, there is a good example of it. If you're eating a small amount of pizza, many poskim will say that you don't wash on it, you just say mizonis. But if you kaveh a suda, like you're eating a couple of slices, and that's going to be your main meal for that part of the day, then according to that, you would have to wash for it. But you get into also actually, so we're going to be talking about in a couple of days, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to be talking about in the Gemara of Sut and other kinds of things, we're going to be talking about a concept of Pas HaBar B'Kisnin, where there's several different opinions what it is, but it's all, according to many opinions, it's what we think of as mizonis cake and mizonis bread and things like that, and there it's not so simple. If you kaveh a soda, then it's not necessarily mizonis anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why you actually have some people go so far as to say that there's no, you know, you have the famous expression that there's no such thing as a mizonis roll is based on that concept. So that's at least when it's a roll and it has the shape of bread, though, but here we're talking about where it doesn't even necessarily have that, where it's more like a pancake or a blintz or something. Okay. Only Abaye Rabbi Yosef. Hi Kuva Da'ara Maim Barchin Elevet. So Abaye asked Rabbi Yosef, as far as the Kuva Da'ara, the thing that we described before where you make a hole in the stove and you pour the dough into it. So what bracha do you make on it? Omale, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, Misabrit Namahu. Do you think that it's considered bread? It's not real bread. Guvla Ba'almu. It's really just like a batter. It doesn't have the status of bread because it's mixed together very thinly in the first place. It can't really be considered bread. On the other hand,
what would it be today?
So I don't know if there's an equivalent to it today. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure there is a real equivalent. Not really a wrap, because again, a wrap is again, well, okay, so actually that maybe that's a good point. I mean, according to Tosfos, there's a distinction that if it's made from a thick dough, then for sure you make hamotzi on it, and the only question is about a thin batter, then wraps are made from a regular dough. They're just baked flat, that's all. So then for sure they'd be hamotzi. But
the wraps?
According to that way of looking at it. On the other hand, if we say that it depends on the consistency of the dough to begin with, then wraps to begin with are made from a thick dough. They're just baked flat. Not thick because they're not made from a batter though. They're made from a dough, aren't they? They're made from a dough which is just rolled out very flat. Yeah, I think so. But so again, according to Tosfos's distinction over here, that there's a difference between whether it's made from a batter or a dough, then wraps would have to be amotzi regardless. If you say though that it's not just a difference of the consistency of the dough, it's a difference like how much it spreads out, then yeah, wraps might well be mazonis if you're not kaveh soda on them. Yeah. A wrap is probably a wrap might be more like what the Gemara is going to describe in a couple of days called lachmonios. I don't know. You have a few different things over here. You have lachmonios and you have trisa over here. I'm not so clear on the distinction between them. But okay. Anyway. Okay. Mazutra kova sudase yilavei. On the other hand, mazutra would actually make one of the, this kova de aron the mainstay of his meal. So he would actually say hamotzi and bench for it because he considered once you kaveh stood on it, then it becomes hamotzi. So again, here you have the distinction which Alter Rebbe mentioned. And again, Alter Rebbe is not just coming up with this on his own. He's summarizing what you have in Shulchan Aruch and in many other poskim before him. According to some opinions, there's a difference between troiknin, kova da'ara, where we said at least it thickens up a little bit while it's baking, versus, for example, trisa, which remains thin, if it was made from a batter to begin with, and it remains thin, where maybe then even being kaveh soda on it wouldn't make a difference, or others say that even then, if you're kaveh soda, then you would make hamotzi on it, and therefore, if you're going to eat enough to be kaveh soda, then you have to eat it in a meal of bread to be kosher for that, and then you have the whole distinction that Tosfos is making over here, the possible distinction between a thin batter and a thick dough. So it's a little bit complicated, basically. Rav Ashi says, as far as this treikmin, the Adam Yotz behind Yudei Chavasa the Pesach. You should know a person could be Yotz in the mitzvah of Masa using treikmin. My time of lechem oni Korean bay, because it can be called lechem oni, because that's a poor person might well make their bread like that. They don't have a proper oven, or a pan or something to be able to make proper bread in. So they would do like that. They'd pour the dough into a hole and let it bake over there. So therefore it is lechem oni, it's made as a thin batter, but then it's poured into this hole, and while it's baking in the hole, it thickens up because the hole is a hole. It's a cavity. It's a three-dimensional thing. So therefore, it thickens up in there. No, because you're thinking that matzah has to be flat. Matzah doesn't have to be flat. Matzah, we make flat nowadays in order to avoid any problems with chametz. But technically, matzah can have a certain thickness there. So here, a person were to make matzah on Pesach like that by pouring the dough into a hole in the ground, then not in the ground, and then in the stove or whatever, then it would be and bakes over there, then it would be called lechem oni, and you can use it for matzah. Okay. And the point is also that he wants to tell us you shouldn't think maybe it's considered matzah ashira. We have a concept that you're not allowed to eat, but matzah has to be poor man's bread. It can't be rich matzah. That's why, for example, you can't have matzah for the mitzvah that's made with juice or what have you, because that would be matzah ashira. Yeah. That would be rich matzah. He would think over here, this kind of treikmin, maybe people eat it more as a dessert. The reason why it's not necessarily hamotzi is because it's not the kind of thing that people usually eat as the mainstay of their meal. It's usually the kind of thing that people eat as a side dish or a dessert or whatever, so that wouldn't necessarily be a lechem oni. So Ma'abra Rav Ashi wants to tell us that no, it is considered lechem oni. Okay. But on the Ma'abra Rav Ashi, Hi Duvshad Tamri, Ma'abra Rav Ashi also says, the honey, the syrup from dates, very appropriate now, it's from Mishal Sabashvat, Mavorchan Olave Shahakol Nia B'dvarei. We say on it shahab. My time is Zeya Ba'almahu, because just considered sweat from the fruit. It's not considered the actual essence of the fruit. When it comes to, we learned at the beginning of the perek, that wine or oil have a chashivus of their own. The juice from grapes or from olives is considered to have a specialty of its own, and therefore with grape juice or wine, you say Bar Pri HaGafen on it. Oil, we said, doesn't get an extra bracha, but it does get the bracha Bar Pri HaEitz, just like the oil, just like the olive it came from. But juice from dates or from other kinds of fruit is just considered Zeya Ba'alma. It's just considered a sweat. And therefore, it's not the actual fruit itself, so you wouldn't say Bore Pri HaEitz on it.
The oil, we said the bracha on the oil?
We said the oil, the bracha on oil was charcoal, but we said there's only in a limited case, because normally if you drink oil,
If
you drink oil, you said you wouldn't make a bracha at all, or at most you'd make charcoal. We said the case was a person needs to drink oil, or gargle oil, or whatever, because they have a sore throat, so they mix it with a little bit of anigroin and drink it that way.
But if you dip something into oil...
If you dip something in oil, something else is the ikkar and the oil is the top. You don't have to work on the oil at all. Okay, but anyway, the point is that here we're talking about so juice, syrup from figs, not figs, from dates, is charcoal. The Gemara says, Keman ki hai tana. Who does Ma'abar of Ashi go like? He goes like the following, tana, the tanan, dvash tamarim, honey from dates, v'yayin tapuchim, or wine that's made from apples, meaning apple cider, or vinegar that's made from sifvonios. Sifvonios, Rashi explains, are grapes that grow at the end of the season and they never become ripe. So therefore, so you can't really make wine from them because they need sugar in them in order to ferment into alcohol. So instead, you make vinegar out of that. You press them and you make vinegar out of them. Ushar may peris shel truma, or other kinds of fruit juices of truma. Rabbi Eliezer Machayev Keren Machaymish. Rabbi Eliezer says that if a Zor ate them from Truma, he would have to, it would be the din, the regular din, where Zor eats Truma, B'shoigig, and he has to pay Keren Machaymish. Rabbi Yeshua Poiter, Rabbi Yeshua says he's Poiter because it's not considered tree. It's not considered the actual fruit of Truma. It's just considered like a sweat, like something that exudes from it. So therefore, Ma'avad Avashi is following that in saying, therefore, that honey from dates is the same thing, and it's only charcoal. It's not considered the actual pre.
What is it exactly? Honey from dates.
It's exactly the syrup. It's the juice. It's the liquid. They start out from dates. Now, Tosfos mentions over here. So we're saying more generally that it doesn't just apply to dates. We're saying that it applies more generally to fruit juices. So therefore, it would apply to apple juice, orange juice, all kinds of juices would be charcoal. Tosfos actually brings over here from the Halachas Gdolos that says that actually, that at least when it comes to date syrup, only we would say, when we would say that, or maybe even more generally when we're talking about other fruit juices, only if you added water to them would they be charcoal. The Halachas Gdolos learns that if they're by themselves, then you would actually say ha'eitz on them. However, the Halacha is not like that. The Halacha is that all juice,
without
water. Old juice, whether it has water in it or not, is charcoal. And the reason why Ma'abar of Ashi specified date honey, date syrup, is even though dates are one of the Shivas Aminim, and even though the Torah actually mentions them among the Shivas Aminim, it doesn't say the word date, it says dvash, which means honey. So you would think the honey from dates should be important enough to be considered the pre. We're saying no, even that is considered just an exudation and it's just charcoal. But how much more so for other kinds of fruit juices, like apple juice or orange juice or what have you, that they are charcoal. And that's the
juice, berry juice.
Everything. Everything except for wine and everything except for wine and olive oil are charcoal, and that's the word. Okay. One of the Chachamim one time asked Rabba a question. Trima mahu. What is the din about trima? What bracha would you make on it? Trima, Rashi describes, is a term for something that's sort of mashed up, but not completely crushed. So what bracha would you make on it? Loi hava adaita de rova, my karmel. Rova de... No, not like peels. No, like fruit. Like fruit that you mash up. Fruit or vegetables or whatever that's mashed up. But not totally mashed up. It's just, yeah. Okay, so loi hava adaita de rova, my karmel. Rova didn't understand what trima is. And Steinsaltz points out that trima is actually a Greek word. So Rova, who lived in Bava, was not as familiar with it. And Bava didn't speak Greek. Okay. Yossi Ravina Kameh de Rava, but Ravina was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rava. He understood what the term truma meant. So he asked him, Amalei, what kind of truma, what was the original thing that you that was used to make the shurima. The shumshumi kamitz, are you talking about where you take sesame seeds and you press them to remove the oil? So you mash them up, you press them to get the oil out. Or the kurkumi kamitz, or are you talking about shurima that's made by taking saffron and crushing it? Or the purtini kamitz, or are you talking about the kind where you take where you take grapes and you mash them up in order to then use the grape seeds and pour water over them, the grape seeds, and whatever's left in the grapes, the mash that's left, you're gonna pour water over it to make what's called temed, it absorbs some of the taste.
Grape skins that are mashed.
So it's sort of grape skins and grape seeds and whatever that are mashed. Mm-hmm. So all those things can be called trima because all of them are involved in mash. So Ada Hachi Vahachi Aski Rava Ladaite. So Rava then, when Ravina was saying that, he realized now what Trima meant. Now based on what Ravina had asked, he realized. Amalei Chashilta Vadi Kamet. Okay, I understand. You must be talking about Chashilta, which is you're talking about something that was mashed or crushed or squashed or something, which the Aramaic word for it is Chashilta. Chashilta Vadi Kamet. You must be talking about Chashilta. The Itkauta Milta. So that you remind me actually of something that Rav Ashi said, Hai Tamu Shel Truma, when it comes to dates of Truma, Mutar Lasis Man Truma, you're allowed to turn them into Truma. Now, you have a rule with Truma that you have Truma, if you have dates of Truma, you're allowed to match them and make Truma out of them because that's not considered. Now, you're not allowed to ruin fruit of truma, but here it's not ruining. It's here it's still edible afterwards. You mash them up. You mash them up to make sort of like a paste. They're still edible.
But not as truma.
No. A person had dates, and he took some of the dates and designated them as truma and gave them to the kohen.
Okay.
The kohen has rules about that truma, okay. What he's allowed and not allowed to do with it, and one of them is he's not allowed to ruin it. He's not allowed to ruin it or just throw it in the garbage or whatever, but he's allowed to make from it truma. But also lost his man shecher, but he's not allowed to go and make it into beer because that would be matzah. That would be ruining the original food. So therefore, so we see, in other words, that truma. We see first of all from that what truma is. So that Rava reminded himself that now I remember what truma is. And the hilchasa and the halacha is tamri v'avinu v'avdinu trima. So the halacha then is that if you took dates and made trima out of them by mashing them up, mevorchin in alayu ilavayu bur priha eitz. You still say bur priha eitz on them. My time of b'mosayu kaimim kinim ikra, because they still retain their original status of before. They haven't totally been transformed. Because we see from the statement of Rav Ashi that we just quoted that there's a difference between trima where the actual fruit still exists. More or less intact, it's just been matched,
right.
Versus when you make beer out of it where then you don't have the actual mamashes of the fruit anymore. So therefore, now this is relevant as far as various kinds of mashes and sauces and tastes and whatever, applesauce, mashed potatoes, many things like that. According to the straightforward meaning of the Gemara over here, you would always be saying ha'eth on them. However, the Rosh throws in a bit of a monkey wrench over there and says, given that Rashi mentioned that given that Rashi used the expression "akosish ksas ve'enimur," it's like it's crushed a little bit, but it's not completely mashed. It's not completely broken up. So the Rosh learns if it is completely broken up,
yeah.
Then you wouldn't. Then you would say shakol on it.
So apple sauce.
Okay, so apple sauce. Let's talk about, for example. So the other day I was mentioning that apple sauce, there'd be a difference whether there are chunks in it or not. If there are chunks, then you say ha'etz, and if not, then you say shakol. Actually, Rabbi Osber told me yesterday that no, we say that not. With the Rabbi Marlow in his brachos guide wrote that it's always ha'etz. Apple sauce is always ha'etz, and the reason is whether there are chunks or not, and the reason is. Because it also, there's another factor, which is it depends, and we're going to be talking about that later, is this the normal, actually, we'll talk about it now, this is it, whether that's the normal way of eating this particular fruit. In the case of apples, it's just as common to eat them regular, to eat them whole, or cut up, or whatever, as to eat them mashed up into applesauce. So therefore, applesauce retains the bracha ha'etz, even if it's completely mashed up and it's not recognizable as
bananas.
So bananas would be a similar thing. Mashed bananas would be well. People eat more. People eat bananas more whole than mashed, I guess. So that might be a difference. Another example, for example, would be mashed potatoes. It's just as common to eat potatoes mashed as it is to eat them whole, and therefore, again, they would still be hadamah. If you have, on the other hand, Rabbi Marlow has in his guide over there, if, for example, if you have, instant potatoes, where if you have, they grind up the potato before it's even cooked into powder to make instant potatoes, then those would be shakol, right?
But if you take this powder and you mix it and become like mashed potatoes again.
No, because it's still the fact that you reconstitute it into mashed potatoes. No. So if the potatoes were cooked and then made into powder, then that's different. But no, if you take instant, then you're not eating instant potato mix anyway. You're anyway making it back into mashed potatoes. This is what we were talking about the other day as far as Pringles. Pringles are much like that also because of you that's ground up into, it's ground up into a paste.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's then it's then it's then it's shaped and baked into Pringles. So those indeed are shakol. Okay. Next, shtisa. Let's talk about the din of shtisa. Shtisa Rashi described as it's made from flour from kernels of grain that were dried in the oven. You took the kernels while they were still fresh and moist and dried them in the oven, and then you grind them up into flour. And then in other places, we're going to see in our Gemara that you then mix it with various other ingredients or various liquids to make some kind of drink. This literally means a drink.
Yeah.
So elsewhere, Rashi describes you mix it with olive oil and salt water. In another place, Rashi mentions you put in honey. Anyway, the point is, so it contains flour, but it's made into a drink of some kind. So what's the bracha? Rav Amar Shahakol Mi B'Dvaro Yishmol Amar Barim Minim Mizanis. Amr of Chista v'loy pligi, so Rav Chista says they're actually not arguing. One's talking about where it has a thicker consistency, so it's more like a pudding and you eat it. Whereas that would be when Shmuel says you say bur minim azonis on it because it still is actually a food. It's thinner consistency, but it's more like pudding or something like that, or pudding or mousse or whatever, and you can eat it. Therefore, you would say mazonis. Habaraka, whereas Rav, who says that it's charcoal, would be talking about where it's a thinner consistency and it's meant to be drunk.
So they agree, but
different consistency. So that's the difference. Avala achila avila. If you make it thick, then it's made for regular eating. Therefore, you say mazonis. Raka look for avila. Whereas if you make it thinner. If you put in more water or oil or whatever, then you're making it and you're making it thinner. Then it's made for refuah, and therefore it gets downgraded a bracha. Therefore, it's a shakol, right? Okay. Masiv Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, I have a contradiction. If you're telling me that thin shtisa is meant for refuah, people only drink it for healing purposes. What we learn in a braisa, and you have the beginning of that braisa that talks about. Talks about cases when you're mixing a mixture on Shabbos. When do you have a problem where you can't do it on Shabbos because of the issue of lush, because you're not allowed to knead? So the Braisa starts by mentioning a machlokas of Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi about certain cases of making mixtures. But the Braisa continues. B'shavin, they both agree shaburchshenas ashoses b'Shabbos that you are allowed to stir shasas, which is the same as the shtisa we're talking about every year. You're allowed to stir it on Shabbos, which is to stir it, to mix it up properly, because otherwise the flour that you put in it tends to fall to the bottom. So you're allowed to mix it on Shabbos. The shosin zisim hamitzri, they also both agree that you're allowed to drink zisim hamitzri on Shabbos. Zisim hamitzri is a concoction that the Gemara mentions in Pesachim, which is made out of a mixture of barley. A barley, saffron, and salt. And they would drink it as like as to barley, saffron, and salt. And they would mix it together, one third, one part of each, mixed together, and they would drink it as they'd dissolve it in water or something else, and then they'd drink it, and it helps with stomach problems, whatever. So you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos. So yeah. So if you're telling me that thin shtisa is always meant for refuah, then what do you mean? You can't do that on Shabbos. Refuah b'Shabbos mishari, as we talked about the other day. You're not allowed to take medicines on Shabbos unless a person is sick in bed or whatever. And here we're not talking about that. So obviously there. Yeah, the whole concept is right. Okay. So therefore, what are you telling me that a thin shtisa is meant only for refuah, and that's why Rav is saying it's shakol? It can't be for refuah, otherwise you wouldn't be able to mix it and take it on Shabbos. Amalei Abaya v'Atlech is put up. The Abaya says to Rav Yosef, what, you don't agree that shosis shtisa, when it's thin, is meant for refuah? Well, it's not. After all, we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, in that whole sugya. Kol ha'ochlin ochel adam l'refuah b'Shabbos. A person is allowed to eat regular foods on Shabbos, even if those foods have medicinal purpose as well. The Halamashkin shows that, and the same thing as far as drinks. In other words, the point is that Abaya says that you're thinking that anything that you're taking for medicinal purposes, you're not allowed on Shabbos. But actually what it is if it's a food that healthy people would eat or drink as well, then you are allowed to take it on Shabbos, even if you even in your particular case. Right. In your particular case, you're taking it for medicinal purposes. So the Zisim HaMitzri, for example, that we mentioned is an example of that. People will drink Zisim HaMitzri even just as a plain drink when they're healthy. But also it has beneficial effects when a person has a stomachache. So the same thing. The same thing as far as shoses can be the same thing. The primary purpose, it is a regular drink. People sometimes will drink it just dumb, but it's right. But people use it for a food. Elamai islachomemar. So Abaye says, so what do you have to say? Obviously, what it is gavra la'achila kamachaven. When it comes to eating foods that also have medicinal benefit, the person mainly mainly means to eat it, and the same way over here with shoses, yes, it does have medicinal purposes when it's made thin, as opposed to when it's made thick, then it's not meant for medicine at all, then it's just something that somebody eats. But like this, because he means to eat it, then therefore it's okay on Shabbos as well. So we can still say that it does have a purpose for refuah when it's made thin. Nevertheless, you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos, and you're allowed to even stir it on Shabbos because it has other purposes. So therefore, yeah.
Something that would have only medical purpose.
Then you wouldn't be able to take it on Shabbos. Right? Lishna Achrina, another version of how Abaye said, El Ma'isvachomema, what are you going to say? Gavra la'achila kamachaven. In the case of the foods and drinks that the Mishnah says you're allowed to eat and drink on Shabbos, we're talking about the person intends to eat, or a form of mela kahavya, the healing happens on its own because it's not the primary purpose for which he's eating it. Hachinama la'achila kamachaven, or a form of mela kahavya. So it doesn't seem on the surface that there's any difference between these two lashonos. It sounds like they're just phrasing it differently. Although Rav Moshe Feinstein has in his Truvas has a truva that he wrote to one of his sons, where they're discussing this Gemara back and forth, and Rav Moshe explains over there that the two lashonos might differ. What if other people know that the person is sick? According to the first Lashon, you might not be allowed to eat it, because then it's clear to them that he's drinking it for refuah. According to the second Lashon, he might be allowed to, because even then, they could say, okay, maybe it's true he's sick, maybe he's taking it for that purpose. But on the other hand, the fact is, sometimes people do feel like drinking shtissa for no particular reason, and even stirring it ahead of time, so therefore, yeah.
But his intent counts more than other people's. So.
Well, yeah, but there's also... That's true, but there is also that consideration that according to the first Lashon, if it's clear to other people that he's doing it for refuah because he himself is sick, then he might not be allowed to. Whereas according to the second Lashon, he might. Okay. Anyway, the point is, though, so we still remain with what Rav and Shmuel were saying, that you have two different kinds of shtisa, and one is thick and one is thin, and the thicker kind, which is like putting, you say, mezonos, and the thinner kind, which is a drink, you say, shakol. In fact, Tosfos mentions that's the halacha. Even you have a drink that contains grain in it, for example, Tosfos gives the example of beer, you would say shakol on it. The rule that we said that the other day, anything that has chamesh haminim, the same as zonah, applies to food, not to drinks.
So give me an example.
I don't know if you have an example. I mean, beer would be an example, although beer is a little bit different. But in any case, I mean, that's more like juice that we talked about
beer
before.
Is, exactly.
Yeah, okay, fine. But I don't know if there's an example that we have nowadays where you drink something that contains flour. I don't know, maybe like some kind of shake. Maybe like some kind of smoothie or something you might sometimes, I don't know. Okay. Onward. So the Gemara says, Tzricha de Rav and Shmuel. We do need what Rav and Shmuel were saying, even though when it came to Shabbos, we said that this kind of thing is considered food, and therefore we said you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos and even to stir it. We still need them to tell us, we still need Rav to tell us that it's gonna need charcoal. The Imei Hai, because if we only had what it said by Hilchas Shabbos, Haba Min Alachila Kamachavin, you would think, okay, the person intends to eat, or a form of Mela Kahavi, and as we just said, the healing happens by itself. So therefore, okay, so you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos, but how would we know that? How would we know that you make a bracha on it? I will talk of kibbutz l'chatchila l'refuah kamachaven. Since after all, he is doing it for the sake of refuah. Loy livrech l'vei klal. Maybe you shouldn't be making a bracha on it at all. Like when you take medicine, kamash malan kibbutz de'isvei hanah minei. As we said the other day, since he has hanah from it, since after all it does have a taste and it does have nutrition, boy baruchi, then he does have to say a bracha on it. Because after all, it is a food, and therefore he does say shakal.
Anything that has taste in addition to medicinal purposes.
Then you make a bracha on it. That's what we were talking about the other day, about flavored medicines, for example. Yeah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said shala pass to emar moitzi. We said that on bread, you say hamoitzi lachem min ha'aretz. So turn on bottom, we learn in a braise, it's not so simple. Mahu emar hamoitzi lachem min ha'aretz. Rav Nechemya emar moitzi lachem min ha'aretz. Rav Nechemya takes out the hay. He says, you say baruch atah Hashem lekenim alachaylam, moitzi lachem min ha'aretz. Omar Rava, so what's the machlokes? So Omar Rava, the moitzi kolam le pligi da'afik mashma. What it is like this. You're making the bracha on bread. This is something Hashem already brought out of the ground. So you have to be making the bracha saying in the past tense. So the word moitzi, everybody would agree, da'afik mashma, that it means he already brought out. Just the keil moitziyam in Mitzrayim, as you find in Bilam's bracha, where he says, Hashem moitziyam from Egypt. And at this point, it was 40 years since they had left Mitzrayim. So we see that moitzi means in the past. He clearly baham moitzi. So the machlokes then is about if you say ham moitzi. So does that mean the past or not? Rabbanon savri ham moitzi de'afik mashma. The Rabbanon hold that ham moitzi also means in the past. Just did ham moitzi l'chamayim tzura halamish. And you find that Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people in Parashat Eikev, Hashem brought you out water from the rock in last week's parasha. So, and that was also in the past already. So you see that ham moitzi also means in the past. Rav Nechemya says Hamotzi dematik mashma, whereas Rav Nechemya says that no, Hamotzi implies present tense. Or even in the future, a future tense. As the Pasuk says, that Moshe in Parshas Va'era, Hashem tells Moshe to tell the Jewish people that I am Hashem who Hamotzi you from under their oppression in Mitzrayim. Hashem hadn't taken them out of that, which is in the future. At that point, Hashem hadn't taken them out yet. So Rav Nechemya says, you can't be saying Hamotzi, then it would be implying that Hashem is in the future going to bring this bread out of the ground, and that's not right.
That's assuming that means only in the future, which we've seen is not the case.
Well, no, that he would say, even as far as Hamotzi v'chamayim v'stor ha'chalomish, it was an ongoing thing. At that point, the water was still coming out of the rock to them. Moshe was talking to them a few weeks before he passed away. So what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say that pasuk that you're quoting, Hamotzi Hashem, it's like this. Hashem is telling the Jewish people, Kadma pikna lehu, when I take you out of Mitzrayim, avidna lehu milta, I will do such wonders, I will do such nisim for you, that at that point you will know, looking back on it, that I am the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. So right now, yes, it's in the future, but he's saying that I'm going to be doing something that later on you will be able to look back and say, oh, this was definitely Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. This could be Datim Tiani Hashem Elokeichem Hamotzi, as the Pasuk says. You will know that I am Hashem, your God, Hamotzi. So therefore, who took you out? So therefore, they say Hamotzi can also be passed again. Okay. So a story in that connection, the Gemara says. So far we have a machlokes, but wait. Mishtabchin le'rabbanon le'rab zera es bar rab zvid achur de'rab shimon bar rab zvid de'odom gavahu. The Chachamim one time were praising to Rab Zera, the son of Rab Zvid, who was the brother of Rab Shimon bar Zvid. So the son himself is not listed, his name is not given over here, but his brother was Rab Shimon bar Rab Zvid, who was known to them. So they were praising this brother, de'odom gavahu, that he's a great person, ubaki b'bracha, and that he's an expert in bracha. Which is, as we were saying, is no small thing. Amalahem, so Rav Zera says to them, good. Okay, when he next comes to you, then bring him to me. I want to meet him. Zimnachode ikla lagabe. So one time this brother of Rav Shimon bar Rav Zvid visited him. Apikole rifta. They brought out bread. Pasach v'amam moiti. So he started saying the bracha. Baruch atah Hashem elokeinu melech haolam. Moiti lachem min ha'aretz. Now haveti. Omar, so Rav Zera was not impressed. He says, "Zeru shalom all of the Adam Gadol who baki b'brachas. This is the person that you're saying is a great person who's expert in brachas." Bishleima e Omar hamoti. Bishleima e Omar hamoti. Because if he had used the word hamoti with a hey, ashmein and taima, first of all he would have shown by doing that that now we understand the pasuk correctly. The pasuk that we just quoted hamoti yeshem, that it does in fact mean past tense. And the Ashmin and the Hilchos of the Rabbanon, and he would have also thereby shown us that the halacha is like the Rabbanon, that you say Hamotzi, and not like Rav Nechemya, even though Rav Nechemya seems to have the better of the argument. Ella, the Amma Motzi, but if he's saying Motzi, my Kamash Malan, what is he informing us by that? We just said everybody agrees that Motzi is a valid way of saying it, but then in that case, there's no Chiddush in that. When a person is saying a bracha, he should be saying it.
As opposed to
you're saying a Chiddush in it.
Which is
that the halacha is not like Rav Nechemya, and that right. Hamotzi, and we understand what the word Hamotzi means.
So you should. When a person is making a bracha, he should, and there's a choice in the matter, he should be doing it in a way that demonstrates that demonstrates who the halacha is, right? That you know the halacha. The Ihu de Obad, so now what about this Talmud Chacham? What was he thinking? He just wanted La Puki Nafshing Aplukta. He wanted to keep himself out of Machlokas. So he wanted to take the safe side, but Reb Zera is saying. Not really more of Machlokas, but actually, you do have, by the way, actually, the Taz, and Orach Chaim has a long discussion about this. When do we say that you should be trying to avoid Machlokas versus when do we say that you should be trying to say your bracha in a way that's a chiddush? I mean, look, nowadays we have a sixth nusach anyway, but yeah.
By not saying how much he's taking the safe side,
right? Well, that's part of what the Taz explained, right? That he could have been then taken in the way that now the halacha is like from Nehemiah, because after all, he seems to have the better of the argument. The hilcha hamotzi lachem min ha'aretz. The halacha is, you say hamotzi. The kaimel on kabbonim de ami de afik mashma. The halacha is like the chachamim that the word hamotzi means in the past. So the question still is, okay. So still, why don't we say motzi? And then it's good according to them Nehemia as well. So Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi. The real reason is because you don't want to have. You're saying baruch hashem lachem melech ha'olam. If you then say motzi lachem min ha'aretz, then the two words ha'olam and motzi are going to get slurred together. So you don't want to do that, therefore you put in the hay over there to make it more distinct. Now, at the end of the bracha, we say, Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, don't you have the same problem? But there it's because that's the Lashon HaPasuk. There it's the Lashon HaPasuk, Lahotzi lechem min ha'aretz. So therefore you have no choice, you stick to that number.
Can't you say Hamotzi is a continuous thing?
So the Rashba actually talks about that and says that actually there is also a consideration that, not the Rashba, the Rishba rather, talks about, but there is a consideration in that as well, that hamotzi can also mean something, it can mean something past and present and future, which is more appropriate to bread, he says, because bread, wheat, is constantly growing. It grows during all seasons of the year. As opposed to, for example, when it comes to fruit and vegetables, we don't say ha bore pri ha'et or ha'dama. We say bore because there we want it to be distinct that it's something in the past, because fruit and vegetables have seasons. It's intermittent, exactly. Right. Okay. We said in the Mishnah of Allah Yerokas Oyv Bechola, then we said in the Mishnah that for vegetables, you say Bore Pri Hadama. So the Gemara points out, Kotani Yerokas Dumya Depas. We mentioned vegetables in the Mishnah, and we said that there's a distinction in their bracha, that we say Bore Pri Hadama on them. We also mentioned earlier in the Mishnah, we mentioned bread, that bread has something special, and you say Hamotzi, meaning that there's a certain similarity. Ma pas shenishtana al yidei or, meaning that just like bread is something that was changed into a different form by fire, by baking it, ap yudokas nami shenishtana al yidei or, therefore vegetables, it must be the same thing also, that even when they were cooked, you still say the bracha bar pri hadam on them. Omer rabbanoi mishmei da'abai is zoi se meres, we see from that, shlokos, cooked vegetables, mevochan alein bar pri hadam. Mimai mitzkotani yudokas dumi depas. Since it mentions vegetables and puts them together with bread, now it's true. So in other words, the point is, Tosfos says, the comparison is, bread, baking bread, we don't say that the bracha gets downgraded. In fact, it gets upgraded, hamotzi. The same way with vegetables, cooking them doesn't take away from the bracha. You don't say that. You only say hadama on them when they're raw, and they have to have some lesser bracha when they're cooked, because now they're not bidei shemayim anymore. We don't say that.
Except the bread, by its very nature, has to be cooked.
That's fine, but nevertheless, so that's what we're going to discuss now. Dorash Rav Chisda Mishum Rabbeinu, Umanu Rav, Rav Chisda Darshan in the name of Rabbeinu, namely Rav, Shlokas, Mevorchan Aleim Bore Pri Hadama, that you say Bore Pri Hadama on cooked vegetables, but Rabbi Seinu Hayodin Eretz Yisrael, but all rabbis who come down from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, and the Gemara interjects, Umanu Ula Meshmezid Rav Yechan and Omar, namely Ula, who used to travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, so he said in the name of Rav Yechan, and Shlokas, that you say shakol on them. And Rav Chisda continues, so now you have two opinions, is cooked vegetables. So again, you have Rav Chisda saying as follows. Rav says you say hadama. Ula is telling us in the name of Rav Yechon and you say shakol. Va'ani oimer, and Rav Chisda himself says, I say, it depends. Kol shetchiloset bore pri hadama. When you have a vegetable that starts out as hadama, then sholka, if you cook it, then you say shakol on it. But if you have a vegetable, in other words, the difference is, Rav Chisda is saying, is the vegetable better raw or cooked? If it's the kind of vegetable that's better raw,
Then, if you cook it, then it gets downgraded to sha'akol. But the other way around, if it's a vegetable that's better cooked than raw, then it starts out as sha'akol. If you were to eat it raw, you would say sha'akol on it because that's the normal way of eating it. Sholka. Then if you cook it, bar pri adama. So it's not really a machol, says Rav Chisda. Okay.
Give me an example.
Well, the Gemara is going to give examples. Bishleim, a kol shetchilos, a sha'akol, nimidvaroi, sholkoi, bar pri adama. Okay, I can easily find vegetables that you don't normally eat raw, and if you cook them, then they become bar pri adama. Mashkacha flo, you have examples. But karba, for example, cabbage, in those days they didn't eat cabbage raw. Vasilka, or silka, which is beets or chard or something. Ricotta or pumpkins, those kinds of things. They're not normally eaten raw, so fine. Those would be the kind of things that are improved by cooking, and only after they're cooked do they become hadama. Ella, kolshet, chilasa, bar pri hadama, sholka, shahachol, hechemashkachol. What's an example of a vegetable that becomes worse by cooking? Now, you have many vegetables that can eat equally well, raw or cooked. Carrots nowadays, for example, and again, we talked about the other day, now, there was times, for example, they didn't eat carrots raw, so they would be sha'akol raw. Nowadays we do, so they're equally good raw and cooked, and you say hadama in both cases,
okay.
But where do you have
for instance, you have to eat them cooked.
Right, so that would be another example, but the question is, where do you have, what's the other way around, a vegetable that's better raw than cooked, that becomes worse by cooking?
Tomatoes.
This. Okay, they didn't have tomatoes in the Gemara's time. So the Gemara gives a different example. The tumi, the karki, for example, garlic or onions. Now, actually, Tosfos says when you cook onions, they do become better. But Tosfos says not so much the onions themselves. You're cooking them together with meat, salt, and other ingredients, so that improves them. But an onion by itself would actually be better. Would actually be better raw than cooked. Yeah. Okay. So actually, Shulchan Aruch distinguishes between different kinds of garlic. It depends, is it the kind of garlic that's mild enough to be eaten raw, or is it, you know, you have the regular kind of garlic, the regular cloves of garlic that they sell in the store are strong and people don't usually eat them raw. So those might be an example where they're sha'akol raw. Your tomatoes, I guess, might be another example. Yeah, so stewed tomatoes, indeed, according, I don't know for sure, but stewed tomatoes, according to that, might indeed be sha'akol. Okay. Dorosh Rav Nachman Mishum Rabbeinu, Umanu Shmuel, Rav Nachman Darshan, in the name of our Rebbe, namely Shmuel. So before we had Rav Chisda saying in the name of Rabbeinu, who was Rav. Rav was Rav Chisda's Rebbe. Shmuel is Rav Nachman's Rebbe. Shlokas Mavochan Aleim Bor Pri Hadama, that for cooked vegetables you say Hadama, V'chavireinu HaYodim Be'eretz Yisrael, our colleagues who come down from Eretz Yisrael, Umanu Ula, Mishmeid Rav Yechanan Omar, namely Ula, in the name of Rav Yechanan. So before Rav Chisda called him Rabbi Seinu, Rav Nachman calls him our colleagues. Says Omar Shlokas Mavochan Aleim Shakol Nibadvarim. Vani Oimer, and Rav Nachman says, unlike Rav Chisda who said that there's no machloikas and it depends whether the thing is improved by cooking or not. And by the way, this Tosfos points out, this halacha also applies as far as fruit. By the same token, fruit, it also depends, is it normally eaten raw? Is it better raw than cooked? Or is it equally commonly eaten? Okay, but there are some, okay, but nevertheless, though, you have, Tosfos says, for example, that apples, for example, are just as good cooked as raw. So therefore, you would say, okay, maybe tastes have changed, but then in Tosfos' time, it depends how you make them, I guess. But anyway, so suppose just give the example. Let's say that cooked apples would still be hay. So Rav Nachman, unlike Rav Chisda, who said there's no machloikas, it depends whether the thing is improved by cooking or not, Rav Nachman is saying it is actually a machloikas. D'tanya, as we learn in a braisa, yotze b'roku kashori, when it comes to being yotze masa on Pesach, you can be yotze with a piece of masa. Rokik literally means a thin wafer, because that's usually how masas are made. So you can be yotze when it was soaked in water over mavushal, or if it was cooked, shaloini moyach, as long as it didn't dissolve, divrei Rav Meir. Rabbi Yossi says that no, you can be yotze masa if it was soaked in water to soften it, but not if it was cooked, even if it wasn't dissolved. So you see, in other words, that there's machloikas about masa, if it was cooked, whether it still has the din of bread. So by the same token, you can have machloikas about vegetables, whether they still have the din of vegetables, and you say ha'eth, and you say ha'adama. However, the Gemara says v'loihi, actually that's not right. That machloikas is not really related to our machloikas. We can say that everybody, that both Tanoim, the Chachamim and Rav Meir and Rav Yossi, might agree that cooked vegetables get bor pri hadama, but ad kam, like Omer Rav Yossi Hossam, elamishim debein and tam masa v'leka. The reason why Rav Yossi is saying that you can't be yotze with masa that was cooked is because it doesn't have the taste of masa anymore. It's considered more like masa ashira.
It's not a piece of
which is not the case with vegetables, right? Aval hocha, after the Rabbi Yossi Moide, but over here, even Rabbi Yossi might agree that even though the vegetables are cooked, they still keep their original bracha. Okay. More on this topic. Amar Rav Chiya ba'Aba, Amar Rav Yechon, Shlokas Mvorcha Aleim Bar Pri Adama. So Rav Chiya ba'Aba is telling us in the name of Rav Yechon, and that you say Bar Pri Adama. Now before, we had Ula reporting in the name of Rav Yechon, and that you say Shakol. Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes says the name of Rabbi Yechon and that's Shakol.
So
1 second. Amar Rav Nachman. So how do we get these two versions? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Kava Ula L'Shabesh Dei K'Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes. What happened is, Ula, when he said in the name of Rabbi Yechonon, that's Shakol, what happened was he heard from Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes that Rabbi Yechonon said Shakol, which is actually a mistake, as the Gemara is going to go on today. So Rabbi Yamin made the mistake. Ula heard that and thought that was correct. So he reviewed it until eventually it became fixed in his mind that is what Rabbi Yechonon said. And now he repeated it in the name of Rabbi Yechonon. But in fact, what Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba is saying is the correct version of what Rabbi Yechonon is saying. So in fact, Tohi Bar Rav Zera. So Rav Zera wondered about it. Why are we even mentioning that machlokes in the Beit Medrash between Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba and Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes? V'chima inyan Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes eitzer Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba. How do we even mention Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes' opinion in the same breath as Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba to imply as though they're like an equal level and that each of them is a valid version of what Rabbi Yechonon said? There's a big difference. Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba dayek v'gama shmaiter merabbi Yechon and Rabbi. Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba was very precise to learn exactly from Rabbi Yechonon and repeat it over in the exact words. We had in the previous perek an example of that also. We had an example of Rakhba, for example, was very careful to always use his Rebbe's wording. Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes is not so careful to be precise with the wording. But Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba, also there's another advantage of Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba. Kol tlosin yoimin mahabe talmude kameh Rabbi Yechonon Rabbi. Every 30 days he would go to Rabbi Yechonon, his Rebbe, and review with him everything that he had learned. So Tosfos doesn't necessarily mean everything that he had learned throughout his life. It means everything that they learned in the past 30 days. So they would review it together. So he makes sure that he understands it properly. But Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes loy mahad. Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes didn't do that. So Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes is much more likely to make a mistake. So Rabbi Zera is saying, so when it comes to Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba versus Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes, there's no contest. Yeah.
Why don't we do that every 30 days?
It's not a bad idea, actually. You have the Mikol HaShas, for example, does that. They have a system where they keep on reviewing every so often. Yes. Okay. Okay. By the way, though, with that said, though, the Rashba has a different understanding of the Gemara over here, that Rav Zera is not wondering so much that Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes is inaccurate and Rabbi Chiya Ba'Aba is accurate, but rather, why are you, Rav Nachman, assuming there's machlokas between them when it's just as easy to understand, like Rav Chista did, that they're talking about different cases, different kinds of vegetables? And besides that, continues Rav Zera, besides for these considerations that we just said, that Rabbi Yamin's opinion is much less reliable than Rav Chiya's. You have a proof to the contrary. You have a proof that shlokos, you would say bar pri adama. Dahu turmusa, because there was a case of a turmus bean. The shalki l'sheva zimnin, it's some kind of bean. In English, it's called a lupine. It's very bitter to begin with, and therefore the shalki l'sheva zimnin b'kdera. They have to cook it 7 times in a pot. V'achli le'bikinuach soda, and then it becomes sweet, and then they can eat it as a dessert. There's a gemara elsewhere. Actually, there's a gemara in Beitza. I mentioned you have a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim where it says that at one point during the time of the Shoftim, the Jewish people were worshiping 7 different Avodah Zarahs and they didn't serve Hashem. So the Gemara says, look at that, they didn't even treat me like a turmus. So at least a turmus, you cook it 7 times and then you can eat it. The Jewish people are worshiping 7 different Avodah Zarahs and they're still not bothering to react. Anyway, the point is that a turmus has to be cooked many times. So that's an example of shlokos. Also with Shalul Rabbi Yechonon, so they came and asked Rabbi Yechonon, what's the brach on it? You say bar pri hadama. So even though it was cooked, it still keeps the bracha hadama, and it became sweet. And then you still make the bracha hadama on it. So you see that shlokos, you definitely make bar pri hadama. Not like we're saying that it would be shakol.
Contrary to the juices.
Well, fruit juices is something else. Maybe you don't have the mamasha for the food. The oid omer of Chiyah Ba'aba, also another proof is Rav Chiyah Ba'aba says, "Ani ro iskias Rav Yechanan she'ochol zayis moliach." I saw Rav Yechanan eating an olive that had been salted for a long time and had been pickled in salt. And we have a rule moliach to this day, something that's preserved in salt, something that's salted heavily is considered a halacha like it's cooked.
You know, herring.
Yeah. So in other words, so since the olive was in effect cooked, you would think that the bracha should be downgraded. But we're saying that nevertheless he made the bracha at the beginning and the end. So if you say that cooked vegetables keep their original bracha, okay, then when Rav Chiyah Ba'aba is saying that he saw Rav Yechanan making a bracha before and after, then it means he said ha'eitz before and al ha'eitz val kriya eitz at the end, because it's still considered to be an olive, it's still considered to be a fruit, halacha. Eli, I'm a shlokas, labim, osayokaimi, but if you say that shlokas, that cooked vegetables or cooked fruit, wouldn't have its original status, then it would be shakol. Vishlema, but chilam of orachal of shakol nevadvare. So, okay, at the beginning, obviously, he would be saying shakol. El, of a soif, maim, vadvare. But Rav Chiyah Ba'aba is telling us he also saw Rav Yechanan saying a bracha achrona. What would the bracha achrona be in that case? At the end of the parak, we're going to learn a number of different opinions about when you say bari nefashis. We're going to learn there are opinions in the Gemara that you only say bari nefashis for shahakal foods that are considered very important, like meat or eggs or fish, but not necessarily for other things.
Bari nefashis is higher than shahakal,
right? Bari nefashis is the after bracha for shahakal. You have shahakal at the beginning and bari nefashis at the end. But you have an opinion towards the end of the parak that you only say bari nefashis for important shakol foods, not for unimportant shakol foods like here. If we were saying that a salted olive would be downgraded to shakol, then it wouldn't get an after bracha at all, according to that opinion. So the Gemara is saying, in that case, then, the very fact that Rav Chiyah Ba'aba tells us that Rav Yechanan made an after bracha, it must be that it was, the after bracha must have been ala etzval priyeh, in which case the first bracha must have been bar priyeh. In that case, we see that even though it was salted, even though it was pickled, it still keeps its original bracha. The Gemara says, not necessarily is that a proof. Kilma bar nefashis jabes v'chstoyin and alkol mashabara. No, it could be that Rav Yechanan held like the opinions over there, which we follow la halacha, that you say bar nefashis for every shakol food. So therefore, yeah, he would have said bar nefashis for this as well. So that's not a solid proof, but nevertheless, the other proofs are solid, and we're left with the halacha, as we said it before, that depends on the type of vegetable or the type of fruit, whether it's better raw than cooked or better cooked than raw, or whether they're equally good and people eat them commonly both ways. Okay, worth mentioning over here, by the way, in connection with this whole discussion about Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefes versus Rabbi Chiyah Ba'aba, you know, sometimes people wonder, I mean, Torah Shebaal Peh, I mean, it was transmitted from, you know, orally from generation to generation. I mean, how is it not full of mistakes by now? We see from our Gemara how. We see that you have people like Rabbi Chiyah Ba'aba who are careful to make sure. It's not just, you know, sometimes people say it's like a game of telephone. You know, you whisper to the next person's ear, and by the time you come out at the end, it's completely distorted. But in a game of telephone, you don't check back. With the other person, what did you actually say? Whereas over here, we have Rabbi Chiyah Ba'aba and other Amoraim that are very carefully checking what they heard and everything and making sure that's completely accurate, and thus we have Torah Shebaal Peh is preserved for us accurately. Yeah.